Hello, and welcome back to Brown Game Strong. This is episode 2, season 2, and I'm your host, Mithali. I want to start off by saying a big thank you to all of you who listened to episode 1 and who shared your thoughts and feedback with me. I really appreciate it. For today's episode, I am really, really excited to share this guest with you. She is extremely interesting and has a very, very powerful story. As you might know, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And our guest today is Roshni Gamta. Roshni is a proud Surinamese woman. She graduated from Rutgers University in May 2018 and is working in the digital marketing space. In April 2019, Roshni was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, in which she endured 16 rounds of chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation therapy, all by the age of 23. Through her experience, she wants to destigmatize what being a cancer patient is and educate young women to not be afraid to advocate for their health. Roshni is also a huge believer that her life is not just about her cancer, and that's not everything that she's going to talk about. And so in this episode, we cover everything from identity to being from Suriname and what that even is, because a lot of us probably don't know where that is, to work, to wearing wigs, to just figuring life out in your 20s, but also how to make lemonade, literally, out of the lemons that life gives you. I love how full of life she is. I love how chilled out the conversation was. Nobody cried, but it was still fairly intense, and I did get goosebumps at certain points. Because, let's face it, it is a hard topic to talk about. What we need to do is normalize these topics, destigmatize them. Because at the end of the day, and what I find so powerful about this particular episode, is that many of us probably don't even know how to recognize early signs of breast cancer. And a lot of us, especially those of us who are South Asian, we know that something like feeling your breasts is not a very comfortable topic to talk about. And often it's met with a lot of shame. And so that can literally define, you know, whether you're in a life or death situation, basically. You know, shame should not determine our health, and we shouldn't compromise our health because of it, or to keep other people comfortable and happy. And so, without any more blabbering, I guess, I present to you Roshni Gamta. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, Roshni. How are you today?
Hi, Mithali. I'm good. How are you?
I'm really, really good. I've actually had a very long day at work, so I'm looking forward to sort of winding down. But no, thank you so, so much for coming on, and welcome to Brown Game Strong. I'm honestly so excited to have you on and have a chat with you. I remember how I came across, how I kind of got to know about you. It was actually on Live Tinted, which is funny because we were just talking about it. We're literally both wearing Live Tinted right now. So for those of you who don't know, Live Tinted is it's a makeup brand, and they do these kind of multi-sticks. And yeah, and basically I came across one of your posts or a photo of you on that page. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of that brand and what it stands for. And I saw it and I was just, you know, so struck by your story, and really glad that we're doing this today. How has your week been so far?
Pretty good. A lot better because I got a little puppy. And her name is Layla, and she's half Cavalier, half Bichon. She's so cute, and you know, with everything going on, she's just like, you know, she's always happy all the time. So it's like nice to play with her, and she loves to cuddle. So that's been a nice distraction.
She is so cute. I've been watching your stories and I'm just like, I want one, literally. How did you think about getting a puppy in lockdown?
So I had a puppy like all throughout my childhood. He actually passed last year. And I was like, knowing what it feels like to have a dog, I'm like, oh, I really want one again. What, like, and then you're always like planning for the right time, right? Mm-hmm. But honestly, there's never the right time for things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, things always pop up. And then, you know, I was like, I had such like a shit year last year. This year is like going in the same trajectory for the different reasons. And I was like, I'm just going to get a dog. I'll just do it. Like, I'm working from home, so I have enough time to take care of a puppy. And it's just overall better for me, like mentally, to have like a little puppy around.
I'm so glad you've done that, because I think I'm on such a similar mindset. Like with COVID, I'm just like, what, even nothing makes sense anymore. I might as well just get a puppy.
Yeah. See, I didn't tell my parents. I got my dog, and then I drove to their house because it was like in the neighborhood, and I was like, hey, mom, I'm coming over. And I came over and I got out of the car with the dog.
How did she react?
She was so happy. She was like, oh my god, you got a dog. My dad was like, oh my god, you got a dog. And then like they were both just so happy to meet her because she's so friendly. My dad actually like picked her up and put her on his lap, and like I was like, you never did this with our old dog. I think it's just like, you know, with everything happening, it just, dogs are just like, you know, so happy all the time. They like boost everyone's like mood.
Absolutely. That's so true. So how has this year been for you with COVID? It's been heavy as hell for me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was like, oh, 2020 is like my redemption year. Like, you know, New Year's Eve, I was like, okay, like 2020 is a fresh new year. Like things that I wanted to do in 2019, I could do now in 2020. And I finally was done with radiation at the end of February. I was going to go to LA in March. I was going to go to Punta Cana. I was going to go to Holland to visit my cousins. I was going to go to Jamaica last week.
Oh my God.
But then like COVID hit and like all these trips got canceled. And, you know, then it got more apparent that, okay, this is not ending in 2 weeks, or like even by June, this is going to be a thing for a while. So, I mean, it's been pretty like up and down. I would say for me, like in some sense, I appreciate having the time to like actually rest, because I lived in New York and like everyone's always like on the move doing something. And I felt like I had to do the same thing all the time, like be on everyone's same like energy level. But like I was just so tired from last year, and like radiation like drains you, that I was just like, I couldn't do it. And I felt so guilty, like I'm not doing anything and all these people are doing things. I should be doing things, like I shouldn't just be home watching Netflix. So I kind of appreciate that now it's like a bit slowed down, and everyone for the most part is on the same mindset of like, okay, like we're all, this is our pause. And so like on one hand, I appreciate this break, but on the other hand, I wish that I can like do things, you know, I would love to like go out for a drink and like, you know, relax and not think about like germs or, you know, getting sick or something, or like, you know, just eating outside or like even hanging out with friends. It's just like those carefree things that you want to do, but you can't. So it's like an up and down thing mentally, because like it's also like I myself haven't been doing any like outdoor dining. Now there's indoor dining. I've hung out with like one person, but like socially distanced. And so I've been very like safe, and then it's hard when you go on social media and people like are doing the complete opposite. And then it like, you're gaslighting yourself. Like, am I like, should I be doing this? Like, should I just be going out? But yeah. So it's like, it's hard. I think you would agree too, like mentally, it's like a good challenge.
Oh my God. I don't know if it's a good challenge, but it's definitely a challenge. It's been very interesting for me, because I went to visit my parents very recently, and they live in Spain. And so the kind of rules over there are just so different. So I went at a time where there was a spike in Barcelona, and everyone was messaging me being like, are you okay? Are you okay? Yeah. And I was like, actually, I feel safer, weirdly, here than I do in London, because in Barcelona, everybody was wearing masks outside. There was hand sanitizer every 5 minutes, like wherever you went. And people were distancing, you know, and that's because the government had imposed these rules.
Yeah.
Whereas like I came back to London, and the cases are like very much on the rise over here. And, you know, people aren't distancing. I'm finding myself sort of becoming a bit sloppy with where I'm wearing masks. And, you know, even in restaurants, I noticed that, over there was a lot more distancing between tables.
Yeah.
So they would put these like sheets of plastic between each table.
Yeah.
And I found that so strange, because I felt like my parents and I were sitting in this kind of cage in a zoo while we were having our dinner. But over here, there isn't really much of that.
Right.
And so it is a matter of perspective. And I think with social media as well, you know, the fact that you mentioned that, you know, you look at people and you think, oh my God, like, you know, should I be doing this or what? And at the end of the day, like, we're looking at the lives of people, you know, across different countries. Yeah. there are different rules everywhere we go, and it's just at the end of the day a matter of perception.
So
it can be so taxing, and I can totally imagine for you, like, obviously being very cautious with your health. What has that been like for you mentally?
I feel like so many things have happened to me in such a short period of time, like unexpectedly, that like my brain is just like numb. Like when I go to my checkups with my oncologist, she's like, oh, how are you doing mentally? And I'm like, honestly, like, who would have thought, you know, a pandemic would hit and we would just all be home all the time. And like, or like that even I would get like cancer at like 22. It's just like, it's like all like happened so quickly and so unexpectedly. And like, I'm like, mentally, I'm like, is this real? Like, am I dreaming? I joke with my therapist that I don't know if you watch Grey's Anatomy, but Shonda Rhimes, most of her plot lines are like, you know, very unexpected and all this stuff. I joke with her that Shonda Rhimes is directing my life.
I mean, that's one way to, I guess, bring out humor in the situation. I wanted to ask you, so where did you grow up and kind of what was your experience like when you were younger?
Yeah, so I grew up in Pennsylvania in like a small town. And so it was like predominantly white. I was born in Jersey City. That's where my parents lived when they came over here. I spent most of my life in Pennsylvania. Then when I went to college, I moved to New York. And then I went to Rutgers, which is in New Jersey. And then after I was done there, I moved back to New York.
All right. And what was your experience like as a South Asian growing up?
So I'm just going to correct you. So I'm Indo-Caribbean because my parents are from Suriname. I always like to point that out. Like, I'm proud to be Indian, but then I also want to like point out the diaspora because I feel like a lot of Indian people, especially like South Asian people, forget about it. Like sometimes like when I say like, oh, my parents are not from India, they're from Suriname, they're like, what is that? And I'm like, how do you not know? But yeah, as a, you know, South Asian Indo-Caribbean woman, it's complex, I feel like, especially in the States, because, you know, here things are usually like boxed in, like, okay, so I'm brown, so people automatically think I'm from India or my parents are from India. And then you have to like then go into another explanation of where your parents are actually from and like how they got there. Like when I lived in Pennsylvania, I'd always tell people, oh, my parents speak Dutch. And they're like, how do they speak Dutch? They're not white. And then I was like, yeah, but like colonization, and like they wouldn't understand it. So it's just like, it's always hard to always have to explain yourself. But I feel like once I like moved to New York and stuff like that, I've been doing it less and less. And you know, taking on the mindset of like, it's not my job to educate people, because that's also like a mental thing for you, always having to explain yourself and always being on like guard in that way.
Would you consider yourself to be South Asian, or do you say that you're from Suriname and kind of explain all of that?
Yeah, so I mean, sometimes I do, if someone like asks me like, oh, are you South Asian, I just say yes, because sometimes I just don't want to go into the whole explanation. But then, like, most recently, like, I've been more wanting to be a little more authentic about myself and more honest and not take shortcuts and be like, hey, like, my parents are actually from Suriname and, like, I'm Indo-Caribbean and, like, West Indian. And so I want to be more honest with people instead of, like,
That reminds me so much of Nadia from Indian Matchmaking. I think she, when I watched her on the screen, it made me realize how lacking kind of Indo-Caribbean culture is in terms of representation in the mainstream.
Yeah.
How did you feel when, did you watch Indian Matchmaking?
So I wasn't going to watch it because I read a lot of, you know, articles about Indian Matchmaker, about like, you know, how, you know, the controversy with colorism and classism. And so I was like, oh, I don't want to watch that because like, I don't really like it. Like, I hate that stuff.
Yeah.
But then my friend, she watched it and she's like, oh my God, you have to watch it. There's a Guyanese girl on there. Her name's Nadia and she's just like you. And like, I was like, okay, I have to watch it because she's Guyanese. And like, I'm a quarter Guyanese. So I watched it, and she was exactly like me. She actually went to the same like roti shop that me and my parents go to in Queens. And yeah. I was like, I've never seen this on TV before. And so it was just like really nice. And she, you know, she, Nadia was like very honest, very open. She was very independent, which I love too. Cause I feel like sometimes when brown women are portrayed as like independent in like shows and stuff like that, it's sometimes mm-hmm. diminished for that part of the show. They like lifted her up in that aspect and not pushed her down, except sometimes Seema did push her down, but like Nadia's, it felt like she's very like strong minded that she, you know, got past that.
Absolutely. And I love how in touch she was with just her Guyanese roots as well as South Asian culture, and like the fact that she did dance and Bollywood dance and classical. I thought that was really, really cool. It was just something so different. Like, I've not seen any kind of representation in that way, as I said, on TV. I will be honest with you. When you told me you were from Suriname, I did have to Google it.
Yeah, I know.
So I guess, obviously, like, you have visibly brown skin. And what was your experience like growing up with that identity that people assumed that you had off the bat? They assumed that you were from India. And what was that kind of like for you growing up? Did you feel like there were other people like you who looked like you?
Well, I mean, growing up in Pennsylvania, no. I think my school district had, like, it was me and three other Indian people.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really open about being Indian. Like, I would kind of deny it and push that down. And I had a lot of friends. I have a friend who's, like, she's half Asian, half Black. I have another friend who's also biracial, and like, we all did the same thing without realizing it, and we would never talk about it with each other until, like, recently, with everything happening in the States, where, like, we realized we were, like, doing this as we were, like, all growing up together. So I wasn't very open about being Indian, only with, like, my close friends, because, like, when I was younger, I, like, would, you know, I would bring, like, Indian food to school, and like I'd be so excited, and then like I would get like negative reactions from kids, like, what is this, and like, you know, those faces, and you know, the disgusted faces and stuff like that. And then I like eventually told my mom to stop packing me like roti and like dal for lunch and make me chicken sandwiches or something.
Oh my god, yeah, same like, yeah. I remember my mom used to pack me like parathas because they were quite easy to carry. Didn't get soggy. And I legitimately had times where I would eat separately and just like eat quickly. And I remember like that was just, yeah, it was crazy. Like, why was I doing that to myself? But at the same time, it was like, because you got those stares, and because it was othered, it was different. It was looked at as unusual. And I personally didn't want that kind of attention.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same exact way. I didn't want that attention, so that's why I was very closed off. And I didn't realize how much of that I was doing until, like, I got to college. Mm. And I just felt like I wasn't really being myself. Mm. You know, so a lot of my, like, American friends call me Roshni.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the American version of my name. Because it was just, like, a headache having them say it correctly. But now if I meet someone new, I say Roshni.
Roshni, okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know what it is. Like, maybe it's a cancer, maybe it's, I don't know. I just, like, it's nice when people call me Roshni because it feels like home, like, to add to, like, me growing up in a, like, in Pennsylvania. Like, I would hide my brown self at school, but once I came home, I was just like browned out. Like, I would like on Friday night, sometimes I like wouldn't go to football games because I'd be watching like the IFA awards with my parents. Oh,
I loved the IFAs.
or like a Bollywood movie playing on like ZTV, just like with my parents or something. Like, that was our Friday night or like Saturday night. Or we would go to like North Jersey and go to Patel Brothers, and I would get like, you know, all my snacks and, things I wanted to eat. I just like doing that stuff. And it just felt so nice, like coming home and like my mom's calling me Roshni, you know, she's making roti and there's samosas, and you know, it's just like, it was just comfortable.
Did you ever feel like you struggled almost to get those worlds to come together? Like, did you try to keep them as separate as possible when you were growing up?
Yeah, I tried to keep them as separate as possible. Like, even when my friends, like, would show interest, like, oh, we want your mom's sweater or whatever, I still, like, had that hesitation. And I couldn't let go of it until, like, recently. Like, I just couldn't let go of it because I still had that fear of, like, someone's going to make fun of me for this or something, like, is going to happen and then I'll be known as, like, the weird Indian girl.
Oh my God. Yeah, I definitely felt that. And sometimes I used to, you know, now you look back and in hindsight, the things you can remember are the way you felt. And often it is, you know, kind of skewed because it's based on emotion rather than fact. And so, like, for me, I think back to school sometimes and I think of it as maybe a bit worse than it actually was because I remember feeling like so much pressure, maybe putting pressure on myself too.
Yeah.
So I guess moving on to maybe slightly more serious stuff. So you had a very big change in your life when you were about 22, you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And actually, what I do want to know is what your life was like before that change and how it came about, how you found out about that change, and then how you're doing now.
Yeah. So before like cancer, like, you know, I was like very outgoing, like would go out all the time. Like I was everyone's yes girl. Like you can literally ask me like, hey, you want to go to Taco Bell at 4 a.m.? Sure, I'll go. I would run on like 2 hours of sleep because like I just like the only responsibility I had was like work and like I would just like get up for work. But yeah, I was very like carefree and like outgoing and always be down to do things, especially in New York. Like New York is like, if you're bored, you can figure out something to do in like within like 2 seconds. And that's what I love about New York. And yeah, I was just a very outgoing person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you were diagnosed, how did that kind of happen? When did you find out?
I mean, I found a lump, I think in like January or February of 2019. But like, you know, I was just like, oh, like, you know, it's like, whatever, like it's floating breast tissue. I was just like making things up in my head and like I showed my roommate and she's like, oh no, like she's like, I think that's normal, like, you know, like you like women, someone have like lumps all the time. Yeah. So you know, in my head I was just trying to be like, okay, like it's nothing, and I like, you know, went on with my life. And then in like April 20th, I noticed that there was like blood in my, well, even before this, like I had like severe pain in my armpit. I had a big bruise on my left arm. I had pain on my side. And then eventually I had blood in my bra. And I was like, okay, like I should go to, I should go see someone about this. And so then I went to the doctor. Like, okay, so when I went to the doctor, I found someone on this platform called ZocDoc. I was looking for actually an Indian doctor because I like, I wanted someone who's Indian who would like understand, you know, my concerns and like, you know, my hesitations as well. So I found one and I went to her like the next morning. And, you know, she was very kind of like her, I feel like her demeanor was kind of judgmental because she asked me like when I found the lump and I told her like February, January. And then she's like, you know, it was now April. And I was like, well, there's blood in my bra, like, now, like, you know, I don't know what's happening. I was, like, very, like, I've never had a, like, serious, like, medical thing happen. So, like, I just, like, was, like, oh, my God, like, what's happening? And I just, like, needed someone to, like, calm me down and, like, explain to me what was happening. Or, like, you know, just be on my side, which I felt like this doctor wasn't. She was very, like, you know, she was a little condescending at times, like, judgmental. Not taking me seriously, trying to push back, getting additional testing done, even though it was quite clear that I should get, like, it should be sooner rather than later. I had to get a needle biopsy after I got my sonogram. And because they saw something in my armpit, so they wanted me to get a needle biopsy, and then have an appointment until like late May, and I was like, I can't wait till late May, and she was just like, you already waited so long, like, you can wait a little longer, which, like,
that's so mean,
right? And then, but like, I'm the type of person where I usually listen to what other people say before like my thoughts, so like I kind of hesitated, and I was like, and then started like, I felt like she was gaslighting me. And so I was like, okay, like maybe I am overreacting. But no, but then I kept going in my head. I'm like, no, like there's blood in your bra. Like there's something wrong. Like you have to, like you can't just like let it go.
Yeah. Are they typically common indicators of breast cancer?
Yeah. So, I mean, the nipple discharge is the shape of my boob didn't change for me. Usually there's like dimpling, like it'll invert a little bit. And the pain is common too.
The bruising and the armpit as well.
Well, so the reason that there was bruising in my armpit is because it spread to my lymph nodes, and that's why. But the first like sign would just be, a lump. But usually for like, you know, younger women, like we, like there's like lumps, but they're like non-cancerous lumps, but it's like, it's just like good to be mindful of like what's happening with your body.
Yeah. Yeah. I get them too. Yeah. Like at certain times of the month. So I think to an extent it does happen to everyone.
And like, especially the South Asian, like brown community, sexual health and women's health is like something that's not talked about. My mom never gave me like the sex talk. We talked about like getting my period, but like that was it. If these conversations were more normalized in our culture, then I would maybe like, if when I first like felt my lump or something, maybe I would have been a little more proactive about it. Instead of like, you know, pushing it down and saying like, oh, it's just like nothing, like whatever. But I had no idea you should be touching your boobs, like,
because it's so sexualized, right? It's like just the fact that someone outright says you should touch your boobs every few weeks is like, why would anyone say that aloud?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that is a life or death matter.
Yeah, and like I didn't realize, and this is so, this is gonna sound so dumb, but like when you get your period, you know, your hormones are like imbalanced. And so you wait for them to level out after your period is done, and that's when you check. And I, you know, I, that no one's ever told me that. And I had a lot of women, like I've had conversations with women who've told me the same thing, like they didn't know. And I just feel like even in school, like that should be something that's talked about, like at a young age. Like my sexual education class was, oh, you get your period, and like that's it. That's like on it. That was it. Like, it was just like, you get your period, don't have sex, and yeah, that was it.
All I remember from my sex ed class was my teacher putting a condom on a banana, everyone giggling, and then someone shouting condom like really loudly. And that's literally all I remember.
Yeah.
Even periods. Oh my gosh. Like we could have a whole other episode about this, about how like some of us don't even realize we're on our period the first time, because it doesn't always look the way that you would think.
Yeah.
And things like that. And I completely agree with you. I think there's, especially being South Asian, I feel like we struggle so much with learning about these things, because we have to learn about them from other sources that might not always be trustworthy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then usually it's from a white woman's perspective. It's usually not like a perspective of a woman of color. And like that matters too.
Representation. That's why it matters so much in every field. And how did you feel? Like what was the first thing that came through your mind when, you know, when you were diagnosed with breast cancer?
So when I was diagnosed, all I wanted to do, if you've ever watched the movie Click with Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like he has that remote and he like presses pause and starts punching his boss in the face. Like that's what I wanted to do to the doctor, because I was just pissed. Like I was just so mad at her because she didn't believe me. And like, you know, I was right. And I was in shock. I was pissed. I was sad. I wanted to get out of that room, away from this woman. She completely invalidated me, made me feel so like shitty about myself. So yeah, that was all I was feeling that day. I was just like very like shocked. Like the days after I was diagnosed, and even when I was in treatment, I had trouble sleeping. I would like randomly wake up in the middle of the night and like it'd be just like, oh my God, like you got diagnosed with cancer. Like, oh my God, you have cancer. Like those type of things, like thoughts would be in my head.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it was very shocking because I've never had something like this happen.
Yeah. And I think cancer is one of those kind of, you can see it as like one of those dark clouds that everyone's just like, oh my God, the C word, the big C word, right. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a stamp. Like you've literally had a stamp of like, oh, I'm the cancer girl now.
Yeah.
And did you ever feel like you were just kind of labeled as that?
Yeah. I definitely, like, since I've been very open on social media, I feel like some people just talk to me. Like, I love talking to women if they have questions or anything, or if anybody has questions, like, if you're someone who you know is going through cancer, like, you could totally ask me. I just, like, sometimes I feel like people reach out to me for my story, especially, and yes. Just want that. They just want to hear about, you know, they just want to hear, like, it's just like putting cancer patients on a pedestal and not really getting that person at the end of the day. The cancer didn't make them a person. It's just something they went through. And so when you reach out to me to do the podcast, you gave me the list of questions. I was very happy because like the questions you asked me were not only like, you know, things about like being diagnosed, but also about myself and like my personal life. Outside of cancer. And I've never had people like someone ask me those questions.
It's that quote of, you know, 10% in your life is what actually happens to you and 90% is how you react to it. And it's all the stuff around it. And I think all the stuff around it is what actually matters. And I want to touch on kind of therapy. You mentioned you go to a therapist and on mental health, but I do want to say one thing that struck me when we initially spoke on the phone was that, you said that, you know, for my therapy sessions, like we don't even end up talking about cancer. It's always the stuff around it. It's always the childhood stuff, the traumas, the experiences. And I find that fascinating because obviously like looking at your social media, you're such, you know, you're an activist. You speak about, you know, about issues that affect a lot of people that have affected yourself. And if I were to look at, you know, that photo of you on Live Tinted where, you know, you didn't have hair on your head, it would have been just that, you know, that, oh, okay, she's had cancer. But actually, like, I always see it as there is so much more. And I always play this game on public transport. Whenever I look at people, this might sound really creepy, by the way, but tell me if you do this too in New York. But basically, I look at people and I'll try and, like, imagine their story. So I'll be like, oh, where, what do they do for work? Let me see, like, I'll, you know, try and judge based on their outfit. And I'll be like, oh, you know, do they look married? Do they look like, I don't know, like I'll just try and make anything up. And because I find people fascinating. I think there is so much to them. So I'm honestly like so glad that you also said that you want to speak about other stuff, because it is actually, that is something that we need to realize more, is that people aren't just that one thing that they show maybe on social media or, you know, that they are known for in, you know, speech marks.
Because like I don't mind talking about like cancer and stuff like that, but sometimes it just gets so mentally drained, or like sometimes in my head I'm like, is this person nice to me just because I had cancer? Like, is this why I'm just getting the attention because I had cancer? And sometimes I think it's not fair, because before cancer, I was like this. I was very like outspoken. Like nothing about me has changed except for like my hair. Like that's like, I've always been like a very like dark humor person, a very like outspoken person. I think I'm nice. And I was just, like, I had all these traits before cancer, and I like, I don't know, sometimes I feel weird. I'm like, oh, like maybe like people acknowledge it now that I had cancer. Like that's like the thing that got people to realize it.
I do want to ask you one more thing about that though. What was treatment like for you? Did it hurt?
So it's so funny because people always, that's the first thing people ask me, like, did it hurt? And I think it's because on TV it looks so painful, which like yes, treatment can be painful, but people also have to understand, for different people, their experiences are different. So for me, like with my chemo regimen, I was usually kind of like drugged up. Like I had an IV of Benadryl for one of my infusions, and I was just like sleep drunk. Like I was just like passed out. I don't really remember it. And like, then I was also like hopped up on like anti-anxiety medication while I was doing that. So like the actual like going to chemo part, like I was like, I didn't feel pain. I just like felt very drugged up. And I hated that feeling because I felt like I had no control of like what was happening to my body. And I just had to like let it happen and let it pass. But like the days after, like I would just be so tired. I had nausea the first couple treatments, and then eventually that went away. But I think the most like condemning part of treatment is the mental stuff, especially like, so there's this thing that happens. So like chemo affects all parts of your body. It affects like, not only like do you lose your hair, but like my brain, like I, you, most people who go through chemo treatment experience this thing called chemo brain, which I didn't know was real. I told my therapist, I thought I was making it up. Like after my first session, I noticed like I was forgetting things. I was taking the wrong subway home. I was going downtown instead of uptown. And I was like, you know, I went into work after my first treatment, and I couldn't even do the task. I couldn't remember it. And my brain just hurt so much from just trying to remember simple things, like simple words. And even now, like I'll be talking and then I'm like, oh, what is that word? Like, for example, like my friend asked me to hang out and she's like, oh, do you want Mexican food? I'm like, yeah. But I couldn't remember the word for enchilada. And I described it to her. I was like, oh, the little tortillas filled with chicken and cheese. And she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Literally all of them have that.
Yeah. but yeah, that's like something people don't realize. It's like chemo brain. Like people always ask like the physical stuff about it, you know, like the vomiting, the, you know, the tiredness, and but like the mental stuff is also such a big thing. And I, for me personally, with treatment, it was mostly mental than physical. Because physical things you can control usually with like taking a medication or something, but the mental things is just a whole nother like level of,
And I will definitely ask you more about the mental stuff because I'm so interested in that. But in terms of your new hairstyle, how did you kind of embrace that?
I mean, it started really growing in after January. Not really January. It was kind of like Zoe Kravitz like style in like end of February. And then it just like really started growing like in quarantine. So when it got to like this, I bought headbands because I didn't want to look like those little Indian boys on like Sarigamapa.
I know exactly what you're talking about. That's the funny thing.
Yeah, my cousin sent me a picture. She was like watching it, and then she sent me a picture of one of the contestants, and she's like, he looks like you.
Oh, well, I'm sure you enjoyed that with your dark humor. You probably laughed. You also told me you wore a lot of wigs.
Yeah, I have a lot. So the one I have here, I have, it's like pink. Here, I'll grab it one second. So I got this pink one. I think I got it from Amazon.
It's like baby pink.
Yeah.
It gives me very like K-pop vibes.
Yeah. But when I was a freshman, I saw this girl in Soho and she was brown and she had pink hair and it looked so good on her. So then when I lost my hair, I was like, you know what? I'm going to just buy all these wigs. So I bought a purple one. I have two pink ones. One's like darker pink. And then I have like a curly one, wavy one, and a blonde one. But, like, you know how Desi parents are, like, dye hair purple?
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if you get this as well, but my parents are always like, don't dye your hair. You're going to get grays, like, because apparently we get grays sooner if we dye our hair quicker. I don't even know. But I have this, like, inherent fear. So I've never dyed my hair. Really? And a part of me just wants to kind of rebel one day and just, you know, get, like, I don't know, just a complete blonde head. I don't think it would suit me with my eyebrows, but maybe one day.
Yeah with my, like, you know, with being brown, like I always had long curly hair and like it'd always be in my face because I just always felt like my hair was my best like accessory, and like, I always no matter where I was going, I always had to do my hair. And like ever since I lost it, I realized there were other parts about me that I liked more, or like, you know, I appreciated more. Like I appreciate like my like cheekbones, like I appreciate different things about me more than I thought like my hair was like my best like accessory.
Yeah, I guess it is really easy to hide behind a curtain of hair sometimes. And like I have this too. So I do a lot of dance, and I wear my hair in a ponytail usually when I'm dancing. So I recently cut it off. But usually like my hair is my biggest sort of prop when I'm dancing. So like I'll just swish it around and pretend like I look good when actually I'm just letting my hair do all the work. So that's why I also partly cut it off, because I like to challenge myself. But it is this thing of, you don't want to be so attached to something that, you know, there's no guarantee about anything. So it's like we should just be willing to adapt. And I think you approached it so nicely, like with all the wigs and stuff like that. You're actually normalizing that, which is so nice.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's been helpful too. And I actually met through Instagram. I also saw her at a Brown Girl event. She has alopecia. And like I saw her and I was like, oh my God, like she, like her makeup was so great. And she's like rocking like the bald look. And I was like, you know, like I want to be on that level of confidence.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's just like, you know, it's just because I feel like brown women are so plagued. Like we have to have like nice hair.
Thick locks, like really, you know, well oiled, like shiny, all of this. Yeah, which is great. I mean, if that's what, you know, people want to do. But but it's not the only thing, right? To aspire to.
Yeah.
Would you ever grow it back to the length it was?
Yes. I've been using almond oil every week. And yeah, I like, because I just love my long hair, and I really just wanted to cover the back of my neck, because once it gets cold, like my neck gets so cold. Like I shout out to all any bald men out there, because it is so cold. Like I would wear hats to sleep because I was just so cold all the time.
So just going back to kind of your treatment process, what kind of support did you get from friends and family, and how do you think that relationship has kind of evolved with that experience alongside them?
Yeah, definitely with the friends aspect, you know, I kind of realized who my friends were and like who was going to be there for me, like no matter what. And I really appreciate finding that out earlier in like my 20s, because like now I'm devoting my time to people who I know actually care about me, and not just like having these like superficial relationships with people just to have friendships and people who are on like the same mindset. So because like during treatment, I felt very isolated because, you know, like couldn't really hang out with like a lot of people like all the time. So I appreciated like the friends who would like be like, hey, like I'm going to come over after work, or hey, like I'm going to cook you dinner. Is that okay? Or like, are you free later this weekend? Like maybe I can come see you. And like, we would just like sit and just like talk, or, you know, they would just like come to see me. I had friends come with me to chemo, and like, it was just like nice. They weren't coming to just be like, oh, Roshni, you're doing this. Like, no, it was just like, you know, they'd tell me about the stupid shit that was happening in their life. And it was just like so nice, because I'm like, I just need something else to like get my mind off of what's happening now. So it was just like nice to figure out like who was there for me. And truly like cared and like wanted to like know how I was doing. And even the times where like I just wanted to be left alone, like I had friends that were like, okay, like I understand. I don't understand what you're going through, but like I'll be here to listen to like what you have to say. And yeah,
it's so beautiful that you had people around you who knew to say those things rather than to be like, oh my God, you poor thing. Like, you know, because it goes back to what we were saying, like when we were growing up as kids, how we didn't really want to be singled out. We didn't want to be stared at as, oh my God, like look at that weirdo, like look at what's, you know, what she's eating or what's going on in her life.
Yeah.
So it is that constant sort of, yeah, it's really interesting actually to draw that parallel, because I, even to this day, you know, even weirdly running a podcast, I still don't really like being kind of, you know, the center of attention or like singled out for some particular reason. But I think at the same time, it's just like, it's also okay to just embrace yourself and be proud of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's so great that you had that kind of support system.
Do you feel like you still kind of get those people who kind of look at you maybe with sympathy, and have you changed your reaction to that over time?
So I took off from work, and when I went back to work, I got a lot of that attention, which is why I'm kind of happy that we're working from home. But yeah, I would go into work and people who would never say good morning to me were saying good morning to me or asking me how I was doing, which, you know, I appreciate. But, like, I just don't want it just because, you know, you feel bad for me or, you know, sometimes it just felt like it was, like, people checking off, like, the nice thing they did for the day or something. Yeah. And I just wanted to, like, do work. I didn't want to, like, have to talk about, like, how I'm feeling today. Because sometimes I'm like, I don't know how I'm feeling. And I would tell my therapist that. I'm like, I just don't want people to know so much of my personal life, more so than they already do.
And actually, I wanted to ask you about studies and work. So what were you doing like while you were going through that? Were you in college or were you working?
Yeah, so I just graduated from Rutgers. So I was like a year out. And I work at a media agency as a media planner. So first job, you know, right out of college, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm making my own money and like living in New York. And then I took off, but like while I was off, I was, have you heard of Boss Women Collective?
I have. I've been to one of their book clubs actually.
Oh, cool. So Rihanna Singh, she like finally made it like public and like, you know, wanted help, you know, expanding the community. So I started helping, in New York, doing a lot of in-person and like that really kept me busy. Like, thank God for Boss Women Collective. Cause it really showed me like going through treatment that I'm capable of doing other things and I don't need, you know, 5 years of experience to moderate a panel or reach out to someone to be on like this panel. I put my wig on and like people didn't know that I was going through treatment. So it just like, you know, it made me feel more confident myself. Just because this bad thing has happened to me now, it doesn't define me. Like my whole life is not going to be defined by this one moment. Like there are other things I'm going to do. Yeah, I was like very involved in Boss Women Collective and appreciate the people who I've met by working with them.
And how do you feel like that experience, do you even feel like that experience has change the way that you view work or that you view motivation or just your life?
Yeah, I'm in the process of learning to be nicer to myself because a lot of the times, like before cancer, like I had so many set expectations for myself and if I didn't make them, I'd be so hard on myself and like, you know, I just judge myself so harshly when I was just like trying my best and like, especially like coming back to work after treatment, I was extremely hard on myself. Like I just wanted to get back to 100%, but I was making all these mistakes. I wasn't like performing up to like what I was doing before cancer. And you know, I was like, I'm so stupid. Like I can't do this. Like, and then I just like realized like, it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to not be able to do something right now and like relearn it. And, you know, be honest with your team and be like, hey, like, I honestly can't do this. Like, can you explain it to me? Like, even simple thing, like math sometimes is hard for me, chemo brain. So I asked like someone to double check things. I don't look at myself as being unprofessional by doing that. If something has to be done, there's a deadline or something. I'm like, okay, like it can be done later, like tomorrow. I don't have to stay up until like 2 a.m. and it's not working out for me. Like it could be done tomorrow. Like I can shut down my laptop and work on it tomorrow and tell my manager like, hey, like I need another day on this. Like I'll give it to you by end of day.
So being gentler to yourself.
Yeah.
And in terms of, I guess, your ambitions as well, has that kind of changed or have they stayed the same?
Yeah, I think I'm less afraid to try new things. I think I'm a little more chilled out. Because sometimes like if I'm doing something, like, why am I stressed about this? Like I went through like the hardest thing ever. This is not going to kill me if I don't finish this today. You know, it's not the end of the world. Like, work is going to still be there tomorrow. And I think that a lot of people are like that, especially now in the pandemic, because we're all working from home. Your bed is your office. And so.
Oh, my God, I know.
Yeah. So, like, you're awake until, you know, you get up at 6 to do work, and then you're working until 8 p.m. And you don't really, like, sometimes you just forget to take a break, you know, because you're like, oh, but this is due. Oh, this is due. And now I'm just like, no, like, I'm going to do this tomorrow. Like, and, you know, if I need another day, people will be understanding about it because we're in a pandemic. Like, it's not a normal situation that we're going through. So, yeah, I've learned to, like, you know, be a little more relaxed with work.
And do you think that this, you know, forgive me if this sounds crude, but do you think that it took a big life change for you to realize that? Do you think it's possible to realize that gradually?
I definitely think that it did take a big life change for me to realize it because I didn't realize it before. I was the same way in college. Like, I was overworking myself. I never took breaks. I would sometimes skip lunch and dinner and, like, maybe eat, like, a candy bar because I always just wanted to achieve all these things. And, like, it's at that added pressure, too. Like, you know, the immigrant mentality, like, your parents, like, you sacrifice so much for you and, like, you know, you have to work hard and be a certain way. And if you fail, you know, you have that guilt. And so, yeah, it's like in college and especially at work, I was always, like, overworking myself and, like, always had to perform and never giving myself an actual break. So in this past year, I've had more sleep. I've done nothing and it's been nice.
Oh, I love doing nothing. Although I think I did about 2 weeks of nothing. And then after that, I was like, okay, I need to do something.
Yeah.
Weirdly, being confined to my tiny flat, I think I've probably pushed myself more in my life recently during this. Not because I felt the pressure to feel productive, but it was more because I think there was just so much pressure just with the situation.
Yeah.
Almost like in a very disconnected way. Like, it wasn't, it was just a global issue that kind of I sort of reacted to it in a certain way, which was for me to just stay busy. Mm-hmm. So, like, I wouldn't kind of have a mental breakdown every 2 days. So you mentioned you've gone to therapy, and what has your experience been like with therapy? And do you think that even now that it's something that's quite uncomfortable to speak about? And also, how has it helped you with, you know, with your journey?
Yeah, I mean, I love talking. And when I started going to therapy, like, you know, I just only talked about, like, cancer stuff because, like, you know, I just, like, was like, oh, like, this is the main thing that's happening in my life. And I still had that guard, you know, when you talk to someone new, you have that guard up. As the weeks and months went on with my therapist, and, like, you know, using some of the things that she would tell me, I realized, like, there are other things in my life connected to how I'm feeling now about my cancer stuff. Like, there were things in my childhood that are connected to now and that I didn't realize before. Like, I talked about, you know, my relationship with my dad. You know, me and my dad are very two different people. My dad's, like, very, like, you know, traditional Indian man, you know. He loves, I think he, like, loves the pandemic for me because I'm home all the time. And I joke about that with him, like, you got your dream, like, I'm home all the time. And so, like, we would butt heads a lot when I was younger, and especially, like, in college, because I'm very independent. Like, I don't want to be, like, pushed into, like, a box, or I don't want to, like, get married right now. I don't want to do, like, the set things that a woman's supposed to do. And I feel like with cancer, the relationship changed. I am not afraid to be honest about how I'm feeling and, like, set boundaries that I need to set. And if I can't set these boundaries, and, you know, I don't know if this relationship or whatever it is, like, could be sustained without that boundary. And I feel like with my dad, it's been very helpful because he's actually, like, you know, I feel like it took this for him to be like, okay, I need to like listen to her and, you know, realize she's also her own person and she's going through this. And, you know, it's actually helped our relationship. Also with like my mom, you know, even though me and my mom are very close, there are things that I hid from my parents because, you know, you have your American life and then you have your at home life. And those sometimes can't mesh, because if they mesh, it's like, you know, questions and blah, blah, blah. Those two have meshed and I'm happy that they have, because I feel like I'm more honest and open with my parents, and therapy has helped a lot with that. And like realizing like my parents are not bad people, you know, and like also, you know, a lot of other children of immigrants feel the same way. And we also feel that guilt. And so on top of like actually seeing a therapist, like also following Brown Girl Therapy has helped too, because she, like, I love her because she puts everything into duality. Like, you can feel this way and you can feel this way. You can appreciate your parents and also heal from childhood trauma that you have. It doesn't have to be one thing. And that's something that like really bothered me growing up. You know, I always thought I hated myself for like getting angry with my parents sometimes. And because I'm like, God, why am I being like this? Like, you know, they left their own country to come here so I can like have a better life than they had. But like in therapy, when I say how I'm feeling sometimes about something that's happened between me and my parents, my therapist is like, no, those feelings are valid. And like, it's okay to be a little selfish sometimes. It's okay to be honest and set those boundaries because they're needed. And I feel like growing up as a child of immigrants, boundaries is not a thing.
No, it's not.
It's not a thing. And I just feel like therapy also has helped validate my own feelings. I don't gaslight myself anymore. And I also just work through thoughts that I have, like simple thoughts that I have sometimes in therapy. So yeah, it's like, I mean, I only actually talked about cancer stuff when I was going through cancer, and then it would just like diverge into like childhood stuff and like being like my identity issues. And, you know, it's like some of the things that I talk about mostly in my therapy sessions.
I saw a meme as well that it was quite funny. It said like, well, it was basically alluding to the fact that therapy is good because unlike telling someone close to you, in your family maybe, your therapist isn't going to turn around and kind of bring those things up and use them kind
against
you. To your disadvantage. Exactly. And I think that is so funny because you definitely need that outlet that you can just sort of like keep venting out to, knowing that it's not going to hit you back in the face.
Yeah, I remember in the beginning of therapy, I would be like to my therapist, like, am I just being selfish? Like, am I wrong in this situation? And she'd be like, I would tell you if you were being wrong, but I don't think that you're being wrong in this situation. Like, she'll tell me why. And, you know, we'll dig deeper. It's just like simple things I'll tell her and we'll dig deeper, and then I'll make a random connection to something that happened in my childhood. And then I'm like mind blown. I'm like, wow, like I would have never figured that out. I don't know. It's just, I don't know how to describe therapy, but I wish that it was more available to people, especially in the States, because like, even if cancer didn't happen to me, I would still want to go to therapy. It's just like very cleansing, I feel.
So are you saying that therapy is not something is not only something that's helping you through kind of processing like the cancer and the treatment, but rather it became a necessity for you?
Yeah, I would say like 20% of the time I talk about cancer stuff, and like the rest is just like, it's just like, you know, being brown in America, like growing up in Pennsylvania and, you know, having immigrant parents, like that's like some of the things that I talk about mostly. And I am just like hashing through like just trauma that I have that is not medical. I'm reading this book, and it's by this woman called Lori Gottlieb, and it's called So Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. And so she's a therapist, and she writes about four patients that she's had and her own experience going through therapy. And I honestly took like 10 pages of notes so far from that book. But like the perspective that she has on therapy from her own going to therapy and being a therapist herself is very valuable, because it's just like, you think that these thoughts are simple, but there's a deeper, like, things that you say matter. Like, you know, you could be like joking around, like, haha, like whatever. And it could be a deeper meaning to what you're saying.
That's so true. Yeah, I have a tendency to joke about things that maybe sometimes I'm insecure about, and I'll sort of like do a really awkward, evil sort of laugh and nobody laughs, but it is literally my insecurity just coming out in like a really awkward way. I've never personally had therapy, and I think one thing that has always kind of gone through my mind is the financial aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But I sometimes do think, you know, for me, I treat like podcasts as therapy. I treat mm-hmm. talking to my parents as therapy, or like to my best friends. And it makes me wonder right now, like, I feel like, you know, I'm in a pretty decent place. Do I really need therapy?
Yeah. And like, I have those thoughts too when I'm in therapy. I'm like, okay, I'm better than I was. Like, maybe I don't need therapy. But I, like, in my head, I'm like, no, I need to keep going because there's so much work that has to be done. Like, I've only like uncovered like a little bit. You know, I've only like healed from so little that there's more to be done. It's not going to happen overnight. Like, I didn't make a breakthrough in therapy until March of this year. Mm. And I've been going to therapy since July of last year.
How would you describe that breakthrough?
It was relieving. I mean, not like, it was just very like mind-blowing to me. And I wrote it down. I have it in my phone notes, but I was just like, oh my God, like, I never realized that, or maybe like never acknowledged it, but like, oh my gosh, like the simplest thing that I was feeling is connected to something that has that happened to me like when I was a child. And it was just like, it's just very, I feel like with therapy, like a lot of, like early on, I would feel like shit. I would just cry and I'm like, oh, I don't want to feel like this. Like, I hate feeling like this, because you're hashing out. Sometimes you hash out like, you know, hard things to talk about. But then like, as I keep going with it, I feel a lot better, and I feel a lot of like mental clarity. And like, I have a lot of anxiety, but since I've been going to therapy, my therapist has, you know, taught me to like sort of like controlling my anxiety, and more of like realizing what is making me anxious. So she like gave me this tip. She was like, okay, so if you're anxious, acknowledge the thought that's making you anxious. Why is it making you anxious? What's it making you feel? And then think of an alternative thought. So for example, like when I would go into work and people would ask me like, oh, how are you doing? That always would make me anxious, because then I would like, I'm like, oh, this person is talking to me because of the cancer and they're just trying to be nice to me and da da da. And she was just like, we would just like talk about, anytime I felt anxious, I would tell her, like, we would go through those steps. And then slowly I started realizing what actually makes me anxious, and less so with my anxiety. I feel less so constraint, and I feel a little more control, because normally like I would spiral. But now I'm more in control of like, okay, why am I having this thought? Okay.
Yeah.
And like, you know, being able to talk it through myself in my head.
That's so interesting. And I think that tip is so useful. I'm definitely going to try and use it, because I personally don't really handle things that well sometimes. Yeah. I just sort of bottle them up, where I like I said earlier, just try and keep busy and try and forget about it.
Yeah.
I am a big believer in being open about your feelings and crying when you need to and all this stuff. Yeah, there is this thing of like, but we don't always face our issues head on. We always try and find an alternative, or like try and meander away from it.
Yeah,
because maybe there's a fear, maybe there's, you know, some kind of insecurity around that. So I'm definitely going to consider therapy, because I think it's been on my list of things to try and do.
Yeah, but even and, if you can't, the book that I was talking about is honestly great too. I recommend reading it as well. Yeah.
Another thing we spoke about was the fact that the Roshni that you are now, you're different to how you were before. Mm-hmm. How would you describe that?
I'm more authentic about myself. I'm more real. I'm not like surface level. I'll say what I'm actually feeling. I won't sugarcoat it. I'm okay with being selfish sometimes. Like, you know, we're always so, we don't want to hurt people's feelings. Not in the sense of like being mean, but like, you know, if you really don't want to go out, saying no, and like that's your boundary, and like, you know, creating boundaries for me was like viewed as being selfish. But then I'm like, no, I'm not being selfish. I'm doing these things for myself in order for myself to be able to communicate with this person, or, you know, to be able to have these like relationships. I need these boundaries. That's why I like to refer to myself now as Roshni rather than Roshni, because I feel like Roshni was the type of person to be a very people pleaser and, you know, put other people's needs before her own. And now Roshni is doing the complete opposite, and she's being more mindful of herself, also of others, but also more mindful of herself and not giving too much of herself to everyone.
I think guilt is such a big theme in our culture. We're always made to feel guilty for maybe not being there enough for other people, for our loved ones. You know, there is such a fine balance between, you know, that individualistic, you know, I'm going to do me, I'm going to live my best life, mm-hmm. I'm going to pursue my dreams and, you know, achieve my greatest ambitions. Especially as brown women, mm-hmm. you know, we are all so empowered these days. We're just like, nah, F that. I'm not going to get married at 25. Like, there is that expectation, right? And we are kind of breaking away from that. But then on the flip side, like, we do have such strong cultural values and traditions that mm-hmm. are ingrained in us. And so that does come with guilt. And I'm so glad that you're saying that, you know, you are learning to put those boundaries, because it's so important.
Yeah.
The only person that ends up being unhappy, I think, without boundaries is you. And I think you've gone through enough. Like, you don't need to put yourself through more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the perfect way to describe it. Is like, you go through so much, you don't deserve to put yourself further into like feeling bad just by trying to please other people.
My final question to you is, Roshni, what do you have strong game in, and what could you have stronger game in?
I feel like I have strong game in being more truthful. But what I can work on is feeling less guilty about being so truthful, and also keeping things to myself sometimes.
All right. Well, thank you so much once again. Yeah. This has been absolutely wonderful. It's almost midnight here, so I'm going to crash. But no, I really, really appreciate your time, and thank you for sharing your story. I'm sure you've shared it multiple times already. Actually, before we do go, I did want to ask you, what is going to be next for Roshni, or this new and improved Roshni rather than Roshni?
I just got a dog out of like whim. So, you know, if I feel like, yeah, if there's something that I want to do, or, you know, I'm going to just do it. And figure out a way to do it, and not just say like, hey, I'm going to do this thing in 5 years. Like, no, I'm going to try to do it now, or work myself to it, and make it more actionable, like, rather than like a dream thing. Because I'm so happy with this puppy.
She's beautiful. You should enjoy her.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, thank you so much, and have a great rest of the day, and I will speak to you soon.
Yeah. Good night. Thank you.
Bye. Take care.